Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Change Leaders Exclusive, where we showcase and learn from world-class change leaders. I'm your host, James Dallas. Our topic for today is how to go from success to significance. Our guests are Pete Carrell, retired CEO of Georgia Pacific Corporation and chairman of the Grady Memorial Hospital Corporation, and Frank Bell, founder of IntelliNet and founder of the Georgia CIO Association. Before we get into today's topic, let's talk about how you can contact us. On Twitter, it's at HJamesDallas, hashtag ChangeMaster. Facebook, HJamesDallas, and LinkedIn at HJamesDallas. Let's start with Pete. Pete, thank you for joining us today. Pete, you've had a career that has just been tremendous. Can you give the audience a feel for where you're from, about you personally, and what influenced you the most growing up?
Well, I was born and raised in Brunswick, Georgia, in the segregated South. University of Georgia integrated when I was there, but I grew up in the segregated school systems of South Georgia. I'm an only child, and my father died when I was 12 years old. So I was raised by a mother who constantly wanted me to have a better life than we had. We were poor, but we didn't know it because all our neighbors were poor. And we thought that's just the way you're supposed to live. And over time, you know, her constant pride in me and pushing me is clearly what made the difference in my life.
Okay. Pete, being from the segregated South, being born and raised there, and when I think about your leadership team at Georgia Pacific, inclusive, women, people of color, both at the C-suite and also the board, how did you make that, I don't know if transition is the right word, but you had to have some mental models that developed when you were growing up.
Well, I grew up playing golf. Not many young people played golf. And so, in fact, I went to school on a golf scholarship. During the summer, two mornings a week, we'd go play golf with the caddies, show up at 7 o'clock. They were some of my best friends. We laughed at each other and teased each other and played 8 and 10 people in a group. And I grew up understanding that there was a difference between black and white in perception, but factually, these people were very good friends, have remained good friends. So even though it was segregated, we lived almost an integrated life.
So growing up, interacting with people of different colors influenced you. Any other event influenced you?
Well, not really. I mean, once I went into business and started traveling all over the world, as you understand, and being invited to people's homes in the Orient and Europe and every place else, and even down into Africa, you begin to understand that everybody wants the same thing, just a little better life for themselves and their children.
Well, Pete, there are a lot of people, with me being one, who are thankful for the impact that you've had on their lives from a financial and also from a social standpoint. First, financial. Pete, you transformed Georgia Pacific from a commodity-based company to a consumer products-based one. What triggered you to transform the company?
Well, I used to take long walks on the beach whenever I didn't know what the hell to do, and just think about things. And, you know, everybody was talking about a paperless society. And I thought, well, we're big paper makers, so what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And we had a small tissue business. And I read a survey that said 98.5% of the people in the United States use toilet paper. And I concluded, well, I wasn't going to worry about what that other 1.5% did. But that was one product that was not going to shrink. And we were a very low-cost producer of it, and we developed brands from our own, both Angel Soft and Sparkle were Georgia Pacific brands, and then we bought Fort James. who had long established brands. So we were able, from a low-cost position, to grow that business. And if once you enter that business, you need different type people. Check shirt loggers are not what you need to design colors of toilet paper and napkins and other commodities, and Dixie cups, etc. So I think the change in product strategy changed the company because it forced us to change the people.
And if you talk to anyone who has worked with you, they will talk about your emphasis on people. And I remember how big our anniversary celebrations were and the pride that people took in it. You instilled a family-type culture at Georgia Pacific. What did you do in order to make that type and that strong of a culture?
Well, first of all, the company had a strong culture when I joined them. It was a different type culture, but it was a very strong, male-oriented, do-it-damn-it type culture. I think it's really very easy. I've always searched for leaders. I don't believe that you could teach leadership. I can teach anybody to manage. I can't teach anybody to lead. I think God created leaders. I watched my grandchildren when they were young, and they go out in the backyard, and somebody throw down a bat, and somebody throw down a ball, and all of a sudden somebody stepped forward and organized everybody and created a game. You can't teach that. There's just something in some people. So I used to always spend a lot of my time looking for leaders, and people would say, how do you identify leaders? And I'd say, it's very simple. Look for followers. Because if there's no followers, there's no leader. That guy's not a leader.
So using that leadership principle of where there are no followers, or you could tell a leader based on if he or she has followers, I want to ask Frank, because he has a lot of followers, to share with us your story. You founded two tremendous organizations. What has your journey been?
Well, I grew up here in Atlanta. I've got parents and grandparents from Atlanta. And as the oldest child, there were some high expectations that I should lead. A lot of pressure on myself, both self-imposed and sort of expectations from my parents, but then became an Eagle Scout, actually a third-generation Eagle Scout. So I attribute some of that leadership development to the scouting program, which was very beneficial, through a tough but rewarding high school experience at Westminster, and then on to college. Came back to Atlanta, got involved in the real estate business during the time that the personal computer was moving out of the accounting department from a productivity tool to being a communications device, and noticed that there weren't many people out there that knew much about that, and was just drawn to the technology and thought, boy, if there was a company out there that would be helpful to businesses to help them integrate technology and to put technology on every desk and in every home, like Bill Gates' vision was at Microsoft, that company could do really well, because there's a lot of folks that don't have a clue about how to use this thing to make their business better, how to solve problems with it. So we created Intellinet, which is an IT services company, back in 1993 to do that. Became a Microsoft Partner of the Year, met Bill Gates along the way. That was a lot of fun. Got involved in the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce and was recognized as their Small Business Person of the Year at some point. We developed a leadership award for our customers, and we called it the CIO of the Year Award, because we felt like there was a lot of folks out there that had done great things with technology, but there weren't anybody that was recognizing the great things that they had done or celebrating their accomplishments or the business value they had created for their organizations. So one thing led to another, and about 5 years after we started the CIO program, then the CIOs basically told us they enjoyed getting together and the relationships they had forged through getting together at this annual event. So out of that, the Georgia CIO Leadership Association was born in 2003. And we've had a blast expanding that both in Georgia and now in Boston, and with efforts in Chicago and Dallas underway to take that program to some other cities this year. So it's been a wild ride.
Well, the CIOs that are part of the association, and also the ones that have been recognized, What are some of the main traits that you look for in those CIOs in order to bestow upon them that tremendous honor?
Well, outside of the business value that we've created, we certainly look at their leadership style. We look at the ways that they give back to their community, their involvement outside of work. Are they just a heads down, get it done at work? Are they community minded? One of the greatest attributes of the Georgia CIO Leadership Association and other ones that we are forming is that the ability to have peer relationships and to call on other CIOs that have a similar problem, that if you've just solved, if you've climbed a mountain, you've solved a problem, and somebody else is about to embark on that journey, you can be a tremendous asset to them, and you can help them accomplish a lot. And so we have helped try to facilitate those peer relationships so that CIOs can help CIOs and to grow, you know, go further faster through those experiences.
Giving back. Pete, you've not only given back when you were their CEO, but you also did afterwards, and the way after you retired, and you gave back to Atlanta in ways in which were also personally challenging, like the naming of the airport, also of saving Grady when it was in the red and also needed resuscitation. You took on some community, big community initiatives that had strong, divisive undercurrents. What caused you to do that while you were running at, we reached what, $44 billion in market cap at one time?
Yeah.
What caused you to give back that way?
Well, Georgia Pacific and I had a philosophy that said Atlanta was our hometown. Because if you know, the company was based on being employers in very small communities. Generally, we were 70 or 80% of the tax base in all these little towns where we had a sawmill, we had a plywood plant, we had a pulp and paper mill. So the company philosophy was give back, be involved in your community, try to make a difference. And I was blessed in that running a big company in Atlanta, I had a power base of friends, et cetera, so that when I got in over my head, I had some people who would help me. I mean, the airport, I never forget when Shirley was running for mayor, Shirley Franklin, I had had a terrible relationship with Bill Campbell, absolutely. And so Shirley came in and sat down, and I said, Shirley, I don't know if you noticed, but I'm white. And I said, that's because my mother and father were white. I didn't have anything to do with it. That's just the way it came out. And I said, you look like you're black. And I said, I assume that that's because your mother and father were black. I said, does that bother you? She said, not in the least. I said, well, it doesn't bother me either. Then if we can work together based on that very simple premise, we'll be fine. And she called me up and asked me if I'd lead that task force, and Maynard and I were friends. So it was somewhat of a honor to a friend, and it was another kind of, I got to do it because I told Shirley if she ever needed me, I'd do something. But it was a horrible experience, but it turned out well.
I know some of our listening audience, you're probably saying right now, damn, did Pete just say that? Because that's what we used to say a lot at Georgia Pacific. However, what we also did was to say, we want to be like Pete in being authentic and saying what we thought and what everyone else saw. But saying it from a standpoint of how do we make a bigger difference, as opposed to let's leave the elephant, you know, in the room untouched. And the way that you affected so many of us, at last count, Pete, and I know I'm undercounting, there were at least five people who worked for you who went on to become CEOs at multi-billion dollar corporations.
Yeah, there's seven, actually.
Seven.
Now, but who's counting?
Okay. And then in addition to the seven, several of us went on into the C-suite. Mm-hmm. That's probably 10 times that amount at other companies and other industries. Now, you say you can't teach leadership, but you did a whole lot to influence it. So talk to us about your leadership development philosophy.
Well, I believe very strongly in a business unit type organization rather than a staff line organization. So people could demonstrate not only their ability to lead, but make mistakes and learn from them in an environment that wouldn't kill the company. Because God knows I made more than my share. And I tried to surround myself with leaders who were very bright and who would say to me, "Pete, that's a dumb idea. Please don't do that. Let's talk." And I could call them in, and I always ended every meeting by saying, "Is there something you wish you'd told me, but you're afraid to tell me because you don't want me to know yet?" Because I had that other philosophy that said bad news does not get better with time. I was just blessed, James. I had a superior team. And when we all left Georgia Pacific at the Coke takeover, it just thrilled me beyond belief to see one of our guys running Stanley Black & Decker, a guy running Coke Mexico, et cetera, all over.
Well, we were very proud to be part of such a tremendous leadership team. You mentioned mistakes and creating an environment in which people weren't afraid to make mistakes. Frank, when you think about mistakes, talk to us about one of the biggest ones you've made and what came about it.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know where to start. You know, if you're not making mistakes, you're not trying. And I'm sure there's lots of things. We we designed some software internally to use at IntelliNet to manage our professional services team and our consulting projects that we had cleverly nicknamed IntelliSys. And I took a couple of strong leaders from our business and we invested a nice sum of money in a startup right about the first quarter of 2000. Well, in the financial markets, the internet bubble was bursting and it was a steep slide down. And it was a great product and they were great leaders, but it was the wrong time. 6 months later, we mopped that up and pulled those folks back in the company and gave them new positions. But out of that, here 15 years later, the president of that effort is now the CEO of IntelliNet, and I get to be the chairman and cheer him along. The other gentleman who was leading that effort is leading the Inspire CIO effort, which helps us start up these other CIO organizations in other cities. So we have some great relationships and a high level of trust that has come out of going through a rather difficult situation together.
Okay. Learning from that mistake not only benefited you, it benefited a whole lot of other people. For those of you all who may not be familiar with the CIO position in corporate America, we used to jokingly say it stood for career is over, okay? Because of the challenges with being a CIO. What I really like about the Georgia CIO Association, you actually help people deal with the leadership challenges, which far exceed the technical challenges of being a CIO. Can you talk a little bit about that, Frank?
Large company CIOs have much more responsibility as it comes to leading people and teams and organizing the genius of those teams as opposed to being the genius themselves. They may have become the CIO because of their technical acumen, but at the C-level, it's far more of a leadership job. And developing their leadership skills is absolutely essential to success in that job because they are measured not on the results that they achieve, like they did probably in the early days, but they're measured by the results they achieve, that their teams achieve and that they achieve through others. So by building a strong professional association among CIOs, we facilitate the opportunity for them to have relationships. We recognize that being a CIO is a hard job. That's why they came up with the acronym Career is Over. And helping people to connect in a sincere way, to develop friendships and relationships and learn through professional development opportunities, I think is a home run for personal development, for relationship building, and a real essential component of a success plan for an individual.
At Georgia Pacific, we use that same philosophy because when I worked for Pete, the great thing about you, Pete, was that you treated me like you treated everybody else. In other words, if I did something dumb, you told me that. Okay. You also told me when I did something right, which is different from a lot of CEOs, in which technical people, they kind of put them in a box where they only talk to them about technical issues. You never put people in a box. Again, is that because of the way you grew up? What caused you to treat everybody the same? And it was funny. All of us like to be on the receiving end of a Pete-ism.
Well, you know, I started my career as a technical director in a big paper mill, and my first job was to install an IBM 1800 that controlled the paper machine. Well, I'm one of the few people you meet who could still program in Fortran. In fact, I can still work my slide rule. But you taught me this, James. You used to always say that the objective is the business issue, not the system. And having a wonderful system that doesn't meet the business needs you set out to solve is relatively useless. So I really found out that even though I didn't understand all the technical terms, et cetera, if we talk clearly about business need, what it was going to cost to fix it, and was it worth it, I found that highly technical people were not intimidating.
Excellent. So Pete is a walking example of how a technical person can become the CEO. Now, before we move on to more questions, for listeners who have just dialed in, you're listening to Change Leaders Exclusive, where we are showcasing and learning from world-class change leaders. We have Frank Bell and also Pete Carrell as our guest today. Frank, what would you like for your legacy to be?
Well, that's a big idea, but I think my legacy would want to be creating opportunities for others. I have really loved the aspect of IntelliNet, of watching Mark Seely develop from our leading salesperson to being our president, to being the CEO of IntelliNet, now my business partner. And he has just done a fabulous job developing that business. I tell you, it's far more rewarding to see him succeeding in that position than it was for me to be in that position. So as I set to expand the Georgia CIO program to these other markets, it was easy to recruit back Jonathan Fry to be the president of Inspire CIO. And my goal is similar to Mark, is to see him self-sufficient and often grow in that organization without my involvement. I want to be called on to help where I can contribute something and help, but I don't need to be the leader. I want to inspire others to accomplish great things and create opportunities for them.
Pete, what would you like for your leader legacy to be?
I'd just like it to be that he tried to leave every place he was a better place when he left.
Amen.
I've always tried to look back as I moved all over the country and said, did I accomplish anything there? Really, I know I got promoted, but is it a better place? And I think that's a fair measure of whether you're accomplishing what you need to in your life.
And what advice would you give to aspiring leaders, people that want to break into the C-suite and also to the boardroom? What do you think are the top two or so skills that they really need to have?
You know, James, I've always said I could accomplish more in 12 hours than most people could in 8. And so I believe
that's a Pete-ism.
One of the absolute keys is be willing to work hard. Everything in life has a price. Adley and I moved 11 times. Our kids, when you asked them where they were from, didn't know the answer because they were from so many places. Everything has a price. And if you're going to enter the corporate game, you have to accept there's a price to be exacted from it. And it comes at a price in your personal life, and it comes in a price of working very hard and very long and having a strong value system that says, I want to learn and change, but these are my values, and I'm not going to change them. And if I don't fit in, that's fine. I'll go someplace else. But I believe people underestimate how sharp that pyramid is. the odds are greatly against you rising to the top. Because, you know, you're talking about organizations with 30,000 people and only one CEO. That just says the odds are 30,000 to one. You're not going to make it. I think you have to be satisfied that you're on a journey, you're having fun, you're doing what you want to do, you're willing to pay the price. You don't say, I really resent this job because I have to work so hard, or I really didn't want to work this weekend. I think it's just like succeeding in anything. There's a price to pay, and you need to decide it's worth it.
Pete, you mentioned the odds are against you. When I worked at George Pacific for you, I never thought that the odds were against me. You created a culture where I just thought if I worked my butt off, I did things the right way. And when I did things the wrong way, if I admitted it, I wouldn't be punished for it. People would then say, okay, now how are we going to apply that learning? So, yes, the odds were against you from a numeric standpoint, but you created an environment where people believe that if they did well, they could succeed.
Well, the man that was running our European business is a classic example, John Lundgren. He's now chairman and CEO of Stanley Black & Decker. He came to me and said, Pete, I've been approached by Stanley. They want me to go interview. Should I go? And I said, well, what do you want to do, John? And he said, I want your job. And I said, well, the odds are very high you won't get it. So why don't you go and see if that's what you want to do? So he went there and he called me, said, they've offered me a job. What do you think I ought to do? I said, I'd take it if I were you, if I wanted to do what you say you want to do. He did. He's been intimately successful. We had people who followed him that were got a chance to grow and be successful. I think exporting talent is a real mission of any corporation. You got to grow more successful people than you can use. If you do, you create a nice environment where people say, well, Pete's not going to leave, and Lee Thomas is probably going to get his job when he retires. Of course, we didn't know Coke was going to buy the place, but so they feel comfortable to discuss their other options.
You gave people great advice. Frank, what would be the advice you would give to aspiring leaders on the top two or three things they need to do?
I think there's an element of leadership that comes from the heart. I think there's a big aspect of faith that's in leadership because there's so much uncertainty out there and everyone's looking to you to have the answer. And oftentimes, if you remind people that your job as a leader is to be clear, that sometimes, well, most of the time, there's not certainty. There's a lot of uncertainty. And that's why there's a need for a leader. But if you're clear on the objective, there's a whole bunch of ways to get there. And there's probably no right way. And reassuring them that if they're clear on what they're going to do, that they can find the right people for their team and have faith in that clarity.
In closing today, I want to thank both Pete and Frank for sharing with us what their journey has been and, more importantly, what our journey is going to be. As you all know, we always end the show with a Dallas Diamond. That's wisdom that was forged under pressure. Today's Dallas Diamond builds on what Pete had to say about everything has a price. You pay a price to be successful, and you also pay a price to be significant. The question you have to ask yourself is that, am I willing to pay the price? The price comes in the form of personal sacrifices, moving, personal sacrifices and being criticized before you're congratulated, personal sacrifices in dealing with the unknown and making mistakes. But if you're not making sacrifices, you're not going to be significant and definitely not successful. Until next time, this is James Dallas, Change Leaders Exclusive. Thank you.